So now we're going to discuss a number system that you may have never encountered before, although if you've taken enough physics, you could have possibly seen it. It turns out that the only Euclidean spaces that will support field-like structures are one dimension, that's the reals, two dimensions, that's the complexes, four dimensions, that's the quaternions, which we're going to learn about today, and eight dimensions, which is the octonions. And so we'll say a few words about those two number systems, the quaternions and the octonions, in this lecture. The quaternions were discovered by William Rowan Hamilton in the early 19th century. He had been trying for many years to produce a field structure on R3. One day, walking to an important meeting with his wife, he realized that he should not be wedded to commutativity and multiplication and also not be wedded to dimension 3. He was so excited by his discovery that he whipped out his penknife and carved the results onto the bridge that they were crossing. So he ended up putting a field-like structure on R4. It's not a field because multiplication is not commutative, but it's very similar to a field. It's what's called a division ring. You might think it's natural to denote the quaternions by Q, but we already use Q for the rational numbers, so we instead denote the quaternions by H in honor of William Rowan Hamilton. So imagine R4, which is blackboard bold R cross blackboard bold R cross blackboard bold R cross blackboard bold R, equipped with the following operations: set I equal to 0100, j equal to 0010, k equal to 0001, and the 4-tuple 1000 is denoted by boldface 1. And we define multiplication laws as follows. I times I is minus 1, j times j is minus 1, k times k is minus 1, I times j equals k, j times k equals I, k times I equals j. And also, j times I equals minus k, so you see it's not commutative, I times j is k, but j times I is minus k, k times j is minus I, remember j times k is I, and I times k is minus j, remember k times I is j. Of course, the element 1 multiplied times any 4-tuple is declared to be equal to that 4-tuple. So 1 is the multiplicative identity. And in particular, 1 times 1 equals 1. Finally, for addition, if z equals z1, z2, z3, z4 is a quaternion, and w equals w1, w2, w2, 3, w4 is a quaternion, we write them in practice as z equals z1 times 1 plus z2 times I plus z3 times j plus z4 times k, and w equals w1 times 1 plus w2 times I plus w3 times j plus w4 times k. Then z times w is defined by using the obvious distributive law and the rules already specified. For example, 2013 times minus 4101 equals 2 times 1 plus 1 times j plus 3 times k times minus 4 times 1 plus 1 times I plus 1 times k. And then we just distribute the 2i and the j and the 3k over the minus 4 and the I and the k. And we end up with 2 times minus 4 times 1 plus 2i plus 2k plus j times minus 4 plus j times I plus j times k plus 3k times minus 4 plus 3k times I plus 3k times k. So we have minus 8 times 1 plus 2i plus 2k minus 4j minus k plus I minus 12k plus 3j minus 3 times 1. Altogether, then, this is minus 11 times 1 plus 3i minus j minus 11k, which is minus 11, 3 minus 1 minus 11. So that's our product. Addition of two quaternions is simply performed component-wise. If z equals z1, z2, z3, z4, and w equals w1, w2, w3, w4, z plus w is z1 plus w1, comma z2 plus w2, comma z3 plus w3, comma z4 plus w4. The additive identity of the quaternions is 0 equals 0, 0, 0, 0. The multiplicative identity is boldface 1, which is 1, comma 0, 0, 0. In fact, it can be checked that each non-zero element of the quaternions has a unique two-sided multiplicative inverse. However, since multiplication is not commutative, the quaternions do not form a field. Instead, the algebraic structure is called a division ring. It is also possible to give R8 an additive in a multiplicative structure. The multiplicative operation is is both non-commutative and non-associative. The resulting eight-dimensional algebraic object is called the Cayley numbers, or Octonians. We shall not present the details here. It is one of the great theorems of 20th century mathematics, due to J. Frank Adams, that R1, R2, R4, and R8 are the only Euclidean spaces that can be equipped with compatible addition and multiplication operations in a natural way, so that the algebraic operations are smooth functions of the coordinates. The quaternions and Cayley numbers are used in mathematical physics and the representation theory of groups and in algebraic topology. Every cell phone uses the Cayley numbers for coding. Okay, well, now we're going to take a more careful look at the real numbers and develop their properties further. So we begin to explore some of their more remarkable aspects. If x is a real number, then the absolute value of x, denoted by bar x, bar is the distance of x to 0. In other words, absolute value x is equal to x. If x is bigger than 0, 0 of x equals 0, and minus x of x is less than 0. Fundamental to our study of the deeper properties of the reals is the triangle inequality. If x and y are real numbers, then absolute value of the quantity x plus y is less than or equal to absolute x plus absolute y. This simple inequality, which you've been seeing for many years, entails other inequalities that are also useful. Let x equal a plus b and y equal minus b, then star implies that a plus b minus b in absolute value is less than or equal to absolute a plus b plus absolute b. Hence, absolute a minus absolute b is less than or equal to absolute a plus b. I sometimes call that the reverse triangle inequality, although that's just my personal language. A sequence in R is a function phi from the natural numbers to R. We denote the elements of the sequence by phi of 1 and phi of 2, etc. For example, phi of j equals j squared plus 1 is a sequence. It is often useful to write out the elements of the sequence in order, 2, 5, 10, 17, etc. We frequently denote the elements of a sequence by the more convenient notation phi sub 1, phi sub 2, phi sub 3, rather than think of a sequence as a function. The principal property of a sequence is whether or not it converges. We say that a sequence braces aj equals a1, a2, etc. converges to a number alpha if for every epsilon greater than 0 there is a positive integer capital K, such that little j bigger than capital K implies that absolute aj minus alpha is less than epsilon. What we have enunciated is a quantitative rigorous way of asserting that the numbers aj become closer and closer and stay close to alpha within any desired distance epsilon. Example, consider the sequence phi of j equals minus 1 to the j, which is minus 1, 1, minus 1, 1, etc. This sequence does not converge. Intuitively, the assertion is clear because the numbers in the sequence do not get close and stay close to any fixed value alpha. To verify the claim rigorously, we suppose, seeking a contradiction, that in fact the sequence does converge to some number alpha. Let epsilon be 1 half. Then by the definition of convergence, there is a positive integer capital K, so that if little j is bigger than capital K, then absolute phi little j minus alpha is less than epsilon, which is 1 half. Choose j bigger than capital K so that phi j equals 1. That is to say, choose j even and greater than k, that phi of j plus 1 is minus 1. As a result, 2, which equals the absolute value of 1 minus minus 1, is the absolute value of phi of j minus phi of j plus 1, which is, adding and subtracting an alpha, same thing as absolute value of phi j minus alpha plus alpha minus phi j plus 1, which by the triangle inequality is less than or equal to absolute value of phi j minus alpha plus absolute value alpha minus phi j plus 1. And by the choice of little j, this is less than 1 half plus 1 1 half, which is 1. And we have derived the obvious contradiction, 2 is less than 1. This contradiction must mean that our assumption is false. The limiting number alpha cannot exist. So the sequence has no limit. Another example, consider the sequence phi of j is minus 1 to the j over j. Intuitively, this sequence converges, for the elements of the sequence seem to be getting smaller and smaller in absolute value, and indeed seem to tend to 0. Let us prove that this actually is the case. Let epsilon be greater than 0. There is a natural number capital K so large that 1 over capital K is less than epsilon. This is the Archimedean property of the natural numbers. If j is bigger than capital K, then phi of j minus 0 at absolute value equals absolute phi of j, which is 1 over j, which is less than 1 over k because j is greater than k, and that's less than epsilon, as was to be proved. So the sequence phi j converges to 0. Now let Let AJ be a sequence. A subsequence of AJ is a sequence BK whose elements come from the sequence AJ in order. We usually denote the subsequence by A sub J sub K. Example, let A1 equal 1, A2 equal 4, A3 equal 9, A4 equal 16, A5 equal 25, A6 equal 36, and so on with AJ equaling J squared. Then AJ1 equals 4, AJ2 equals 9, AJ3 equals 36, AJ4 equal 81 is a subsequence. Of course, a given sequence will have many different subsequences. So now let's turn to topology. Some of the most commonly used subsets of the real numbers are intervals. The four types of intervals are these. An open interval has the form set of all x where x is greater than a less than b. A closed interval has the form set of all x where x is bigger than or equal to a less than or equal to b. A half open interval has either the form set of x where x is bigger than or equal to a and less than b, or the set of x where x is bigger than a and less than or equal to b. Those are the four types of intervals. A set O in R is said to be open if for any x in O there is an epsilon bigger than 0 so that the open interval x minus epsilon x plus epsilon lies in O. In other words, every point of O must have a neighborhood around it that lies in O. A set E in R is said to be closed if its complement is open. A common mistake that students make is to suppose that if a set is not open, then it's closed, or if a set is not closed, then it is open. This is incorrect. The set closed on the left, open on the right, 0, 1, is neither open nor closed. Example, let O be the set of x in R where x squared is less than 1. Then O is an open set. To see this, let x be an element of O, then certainly absolute x is less than 1. Let epsilon be 1 minus absolute x, then we claim that x minus epsilon x plus epsilon open interval lies in O. For if T is an element of open interval x minus epsilon x plus epsilon, then absolute T is less than absolute x plus absolute T minus x, which is less than x plus epsilon, which equals absolute x plus 1 minus absolute x, which is 1. Therefore, T squared is less than 1, and therefore T is an O. Therefore, x minus epsilon x plus epsilon, the open interval, is a subset of O. As a result, O is open, because we show that any element of O has a neighborhood that still lies in O. Last example for today, let E be the set of all x in R where x squared is less than or equal to 1. Then E is closed. To see this, we consider its complement, which is a set of x in R where either x is less than minus 1 or x is greater than plus 1. Now let x be in the complement of E in case x is bigger than 1, then let epsilon be x minus 1. We claim that x minus epsilon comma x plus epsilon open interval lies in the complement of E. For if T is in the open interval x minus epsilon x plus epsilon, then T is bigger than or equal to x minus absolute x minus T, that's the reverse triangle inequality, which is bigger than x minus epsilon, which is x minus 1, which is 1. So T is in the complement of E, so x minus epsilon x plus epsilon is the complement of E. A similar argument shows that in case x is less than minus 1, and epsilon equals minus 1, take away minus x, then x minus epsilon x plus epsilon open intervals of the complement of E. As a result, complement of E is open. So E is closed, and that's it for today. Thank you.